TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got you a hold of the
level. No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 608, and I'm Libby, your host. And this week we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write for 6 Degrees of Geek.
And this is Tom. I chair Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What do you got?
Got a bunch of news. The biggest news is streaming hit an all-time high last month, May of 2024. It accounted for 38.8% of all TV consumption, led by Bridgerton Season 3, which we will talk about Season 3B today. Amazon has announced that Olivia Colman, Noah Jupe, and three others will return for Season 2 of The Night Manager. Gloria Rubin has joined the cast of The Better Sister, which stars and is executive produced by Jessica Biel and Elizabeth Banks. And they also announced that The Boys' viewership has increased by 21% for Season 4.
Whoa!
AMC has picked up Interview with the Vampire for Season 3, which means we'll get that stat rock out. And I guess we're technically in a different book, right, Allison?
Yeah,
it's the Vampire Lestat that they'll be doing next.
Gotcha. They've also ordered an untitled Silicon Valley drama series from Succession and Bad Sisters writer Jonathan Glatzer. Apple TV Plus has announced Big Door Prize will not be returning for Season 3.
I could have predicted that.
Claire Hope Ashity, Christian Nafi, and Karima McAdams have joined Hijack for Season 2, which I will not be watching.
Why? Never mind.
Comedy Central, and this was the weird news of the week, Chris Rock, Terry Crews, and Tichina Arnold will reprise their characters in the animated series revival Everybody Still Hates Chris.
Okay. Wait, it's an animated revival?
Yeah.
Oh, because he's grown.
Because he's grown up. And obviously he can't play his voice because his voice is a lot deeper than when he was a kid. CW has announced that Daniel Ezra is not returning to All American as a series regular, but he may recur. HBO announced A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms has started filming, the next Game of Thrones spinoff. And it's got 5 new cast members, including Finn Bennett from True Detective Night Country and Sam Spruill from Fargo. Gilded Age Season 3 has added Felicia Rashad, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Jordan Donica, and Victoria Clark as recurring and guest actors. HBO will also co-produce with the BBC Baby Reindeer creator and star Richard Gadd's next drama series, Lions. And the long gestating Green Lantern series has received an 8-episode order from HBO, not Max. Hulu has announced that Matt Bomer, Nathan Lane, and Linda Lavin will star in Mid-Century Modern, a Golden Girls-like sitcom from executive producer Ryan Murphy and Will and Grace's Max Muchnick and David Cohen. Max has announced that And Just Like That Season 3 has added Logan Marshall Green, Mekhi Brooks, and Jonathan Cake in recurring roles. NBC announced that Danielle Savra of Station 19 has joined the cast of Found Season 2, and Dominic Raines is exiting Chicago Med before Season 10. Netflix announced that Will Forte is joining the 4 Seasons comedy series with Tina Fey and Steve Carell. Untamed, the limited series about a murder at Yosemite National Park, has cast Lily Santiago and Wilson Bethel as series regulars. I think we already talked about Paramount, or Costner is not returning for...
Yeah, we talked about that a while ago.
Yeah. There's more. He's doing press for his series of movies, which is flopping big time.
It didn't even crack a million on Thursday.
Well, it made $11 million for the opening weekend, which does not bode well for 4 more parts, especially since he's investing his own money. Paramount Plus has followed Max and Peacock with price hikes. Hey, message to the premium streamers. You don't have a sustainable business model if you have to keep jacking up your prices every year or more often. Harriet Sansom Harris will reprise her role as Frasier's agent B.B. Glazer on Frasier Season 2. Rachel Bloom will play her daughter Phoebe Glazer. Clever. Amy Sedaris will also play a therapist who works with Freddie Crane's fellow firefighters. And Patricia Heaton will play Holly, I presume a love interest for Frasier. Peacock announced that Anthony Carrigan for Barry, NoHo Hank, will play Calypso in Season 2 of Twisted Metal. Showtime announced that Jeffrey Wright will join Michael Fassbender in the political thriller series The Agency. Patrick Dempsey and Sarah Michelle Gellar have joined the cast of Dexter Original Sin as Miami Metro Police Captain Aaron Spencer and CSI Chief, respectively. And finally, two more things. Universal Television, Dominic Purcell and Wentworth Miller from Prison Break are going to star in Snatchback, a hostage recovery drama from writer Scott Rosenbaum. And finally, USA has picked up Resident Alien for season 4, so it will not be on Sci-Fi starting
Yay.
With the next season.
I have and to that. Say, I made the mistake of wishing Sarah Michelle Gellar on back on television, but I was not
enough. It's your fault.
I need to be more specific with my what do you call it? Some what are those wishes that go back? They go wrong on you when you wish.
Oh, them. Monkey's paw.
Monkey's paw. I need to be more specific on my monkey's paw wishes, because I was like, I need Sarah Michelle Gellar back on my screen. I need her to be on another TV show. And I literally wished it like last week or the week before or something like that. And I was talking to somebody about it. And then this happened and I was like, oh,
okay. Oopsie.
You need to be specific. You're wishing on a star, not on a monkey's paw.
All right, let's get started talking about the shows. First up, we're going to talk about Interview with the Vampire. And there were two episodes we have to discuss, though all I remember is the first one leads into the really good one. So the first one was really about Claudia's mature relationship-ish with her seamstress, and how this is like the first relationship that is just about her. Everything else is always been about
somebody else.
Julie and Lestat, and she's like the sidekick or the accessory to their relationship, and she wants to be the center, and she finally gets that and she's happy. And
then, of course it can't last.
No,
naturally not.
I literally thought it would last longer than just the dinner. Like, they're like, yay, let's have a celebratory dinner, and we're kidnapped. Like, I mean, she did not get along with that at all.
Well, I think time was supposed to pass a little bit, that, you know, they were together a little while before we saw that dinner, but it's still not a lot of time.
Right.
Yeah.
She was still a baby vampire, so.
Very much
so. She was told, I guess it was a rule that you're not supposed to keep journals or diaries or whatever, and she kept a book, which Ben Daniels found.
And my question is, when did she get to write that last quote? Like, F the vampires. Like, when did she get to write that? Because she writes it in regards to the trial. When did they give her back the book to like write a last entry? Like, that's the only thing that bumped me, because I was like, wait, I know why she's saying this, but when did she get to write it?
Well, I think that was generally her attitude for a while before that happened. So, you know, she and Madeline were both intending to get away from the Theater de Vampires.
From the dysfunction.
Yes. True. I think that was her attitude for a while. So you can read it as being, you know, deliberately in reference to the trial, or just her attitude prior to that, too.
I mean, what's his name? Louis's the one who did the chain. He did try to support her, because I think what part of it was, if he let her go, then he wasn't responsible for her anymore. And I think he really wanted to get rid of that responsibility. And then he's like, oh crap, now I'm responsible for this child that I've just created. So that didn't quite work out for him. But yeah, I have zero respect for Armand, because I think the next episode was That's All I Could Do or something. What was it called?
Yeah, I Could Not Prevent It.
I could not prevent. I was like, you are a lying liar who lies. And I just, like, when you watch the trial and you see him in this little box where he's just trying to just like be a witness and not pay attention to keep his head down. And then he uses his one little ability to help Louis. And they showed him fight Lestat. Like, he is strong.
He's hundreds of years old. He's like 500 years old. So
he is strong. You know. If he really wanted to fight in that room and save them, he might have gotten killed. He
didn't want to.
I know. That's my point, Mr. I could do nothing to prevent it guy.
the thing that kind of annoyed me, but that's what tragic love stories are about, is she finally has a functional relationship with somebody after being around all these dysfunctional dude vampires.
Right.
And then, you know, they totally mess her over.
I will give Louis points because he tries to redeem himself for his mistakes. Like, he realizes he screwed up with Claudia, and he is genuinely trying to help her, even though once he gets all into Armand, he still doesn't really care about her. Like, she is still kind of an accessory. Like, she's just the responsibility that he has to deal with that he doesn't feel like dealing with.
And that was the problem. She never knew until Madeline unconditional love.
Right.
Because Lestat and Louis's love always had a condition, and usually another party who was more important than her. And so she finally gets what she needs to be satisfied. And then they come for her for, you know, her past sins. And the thing is, you know, she wasn't the only one who conspired. I mean, for conspiracy.
Well, the thing that I actually did appreciate about the trial episode is Lestat 100% admitted all his guilt. He was like, I did this.
He begs for forgiveness, but then shows them no mercy, which is like.
Yeah. I mean, he also has different and very bizarre versions of what happened, like particularly surrounding Claudia being made into a vampire. We saw a completely different version. And the thing is, this is what gets me, is that Louis concedes, oh, maybe he's, you know, that version is correct.
I feel like that might have been the correct version.
Well, except that it doesn't jibe with anything else that we know about Lestat. And whereas
we've only been getting
Louis's version, but you know, the thing
with
is
a little dash of Armand here and there.
Yeah, with a little dash of Armand. But you know, I mean, it's also the fact that, you know, this is based on the book, and in the book, certainly there was nothing responsible about what Lestat did. And you know, it was written without the idea that there would be like a whole line of other books afterward. That this we were getting pretty much how things went.
That's what I like about the fact that they're doing both books together here, which is mixing the point.
They're
of
mix, they are. They're doing that, and they're trying to say that Louis was, you know, also not a reliable witness,
narrator, as far as
this goes, which is fine, except that literally everything about that scene just felt artificial. The way the actors even played it seemed like this is just a cleaned up version, you know, from Lestat's perspective of, oh yes, I was responsible and I did this and I said that. And it didn't play like real, which why it struck me as strange that Louis said, oh yeah, I think that's it. And when he said that, Daniel gave him a really weird look and looked at Armand and looked at him, because I think they're going somewhere else with this. I think maybe Louis's version wasn't right, but Lestat's isn't either. There's something else.
But what I think is the important part is how much they treated her like a thing. Regardless of whether Lestat was responsible or not, that's not what I was looking at in that scene. What I was looking at in that scene is he's dragging her across the floor as a thing that he wants Lestat to help him turn, and he doesn't see her as a person.
She's an accessory.
That's the thing. That's the important thing about that scene, I think. Anyway, Tom, go ahead. You haven't talked much.
No, Claudia's treated like an accessory, a third wheel, whatever, you know, pick your favorite odd person out, and that's how she feels. And so I would argue she is justified in the actions she takes.
Well, I like how defiant she was during the trial. Wait, because like Louis just kind of is defeated, and she's very defiant. And I thought
she knows what's going to happen to her. She knows.
Yeah, there's no two ways.
But both of them know. I just like the way that both of them, it speaks to their personality. Like they both know they're going to die. And Louis just gives up and is defeated.
Well, Louis often tends to passivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Until he's pushed into violence or action. And that's not who Claudia is at all. I mean,
I know, but that's what I like. That's all I'm saying.
No, she's like, I liked her curse. It's like, if there's an afterlife, I'm gonna pack you down and
that's
kill
what
you.
I like. She's like, I need you
and
to
if there isn't
so
one, I'm coming back anyway.
I like, she's like, remove your hat so that I can see the dude in the back so I can see all your faces because I am going to haunt you all. Yeah, that was great.
I'm looking for it because I know that they're changing up things and going their own way in different ways. So I'm hoping that that whole speech is not just, you know, an empty thing that she's saying at the end of her life just to be defiant, but will actually pay off in some way later on. I would love to see that happen.
Well, considering that we saw a lot of Lestat while he was allegedly dead or recovering. In people's, you know,
except that she literally turned to dust.
Imaginations.
Yeah, but she literally turned to dust. But that look on Lestat's face as she turns to dust was worth it for me because he got gut punched. It's like he wanted them to suffer, but then when they suffered, he was like, "Oh crap, they're suffering." You know, like
what did you think was going to happen, dude?
I know. So I did appreciate that. And now our cliffhanger going into the finale is that Louis is now buried under lots and lots of rocks. And somebody pointed something out that I hadn't noticed. That sand garden or that rock garden that Louis has in his new fancy house, when someone says something to him, or the reporter says, Daniel says something to him about where's your coffin? And he's like, we're standing in it. So that could be like, I feel like that's like maybe he took those rocks that he was buried in and he made that his sand garden, which is really twisted, but I like
that is, but that's an interesting point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So I saw that online. Somebody said that. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. All right, but we need to move on. So I'm thumbs up. The trial was great.
Yeah. Real excited for the last episode tonight.
Yeah. Next up, we're going to talk about Acolyte episodes 4 and 5, which should have been one episode, and they should have trimmed some of 4, 5. I felt was the right length, but 4 had like extra stuff that was kind of unnecessary. And if they had played them as one episode, the pacing would have been a lot better. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that we get to talk about them as one thing versus that cliffhanger which was very cliffhangery.
It wasn't a cliffhanger. It just stopped.
It was just stopped.
Fade to black. It's like, wait, the huh?
Yeah, you think
it didn't feel like the end of the episode. It felt like a commercial break.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we're stopping here and then we're going to come back like 5 minutes later. It was, I literally just stared at the screen and went, what, huh?
It was not a good choice of a break point. Other than I will say that my reaction When the Sith guy did that just ridiculous force push thing and just like knocked them all back.
Like all the Jedi?
Like, whoa! And so that was my jaw dropped and I verbally, you know, yelled out loud for it. And I want to talk about the good stuff before we get to the bad stuff, which is it was some of the best lightsaber fights I've ever seen on any live action Star Wars.
Good fight choreography.
The choreography was insane and it just had my jaw on the ground the whole time. I was super impressed by all the stuff that they did. And what I liked too is the subtleties of it that I had to like watch. I was watching a reaction video, which was when I picked up on something else that was happening, which was, cause I was like, why is everybody, I thought that he was like cutting their lightsabers, like cutting the top, but that's not what he was doing. It's the metal of his gear, his helmet and his wristbands. He's tapping their lightsabers and it's shorting out their kyber crystals temporarily. And I didn't realize that at first. I was like, what, how are their lightsabers being cut and then coming back on? Like I was confused. And then when forgot his name, hair guy, pretty boy, he came in with the helmet and did that to the Sith guy. And then his lightsaber went out. And then I was like, oh, that's what's going on. So I just thought that all of the elements of him knocking out their lightsabers and just the way he was fighting versus the way they were fighting and just all of that was just amazing. That was some of the best stuff that I've seen on Star Wars in quite a long time. And now let's discuss the actual story. All right, Tom, you want to go?
Sure. I mean, can we go ahead and talk about the big reveal?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Underneath the mask, which is like this, I mean, it's a dark Jedi Sith-like mask, which seems to have like a Joker grin.
We were calling him Darth Teeth.
Darth Teeth. Anywho, it turns out to be the kind of goofy, seemingly amiable smuggler dude who was the friend of Maze that Osha met earlier.
I knew he was suspect. I didn't necessarily get, I probably pretty much the last episode, episode four is when you figure it out. But even before that, I didn't trust him. I didn't trust him, but I knew I didn't, because his personality kept switching depending on who he was talking to. And I was like, oh, this guy's lying. So,
well, once the mask off, it turns out the dude's, I mean, he's kind of a sociopath.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, totally. And he's got serious beef with Jedi.
Yeah, but we just don't know what that is yet. And
we don't know what the beef is about. Right. And he can fight. So there's all kinds of fan rumors saying, well, does he have a master out there who trained him? And then he's trying to train either Archer or May.
Yeah, he definitely wants an apprentice. His whole thing is, I need an apprentice. Yes, you're right. He needs an acolyte.
So, no, what I was surprised was just the sheer body count.
Oh, it was crazy.
Basically, everybody except for
the twins.
The dude from Squid Game.
Soul.
For Soul and the twins, and he even kind of like kills the droid.
Kills everybody. Everybody on that planet, except for the weird sniffy guy.
Oh, except for the little bear rodent creature thing.
Yeah, whatever that dude is.
Yes, the ersatz Ewoky thing. Yeah.
That's why I was saying, like, I was just like jaws on the ground. Yeah, and then I have to say I did like the hand-to-hand, because I was like, have we ever seen Jedi fight hand-to-hand before? Because both of their lightsabers are screwed, so they can't use them. And so they're just beating the crap out of each other. And it kind of threw me, because I was like, I've never seen Jedi fight like this. My biggest story thing is once you get to the end, I was fine with the whole episode five until the very end, where Osha and May are having their confrontation, and May was like, you need to choose me, you got to choose me. And then they hug, and then she doesn't choose her, and they fight. And so then she chops her hair off and is like, I'm the evil twin now, and just like tries. And I was like, first of all, Soul should have known that was May within 5 seconds of her walking up to him, regardless of her haircut. Like, you sense people with the Force. That's the Force. That's the point of it. And he's been in her head. He has probed her mind. And he trained Osha. He was around her for years. There is no way that he doesn't know the difference between the two of them. That's my
Maybe
biggest
he's issue. Just shook because of the big Jedi massacre. What I think was fascinating about that, and then I need to tag Allison in. What I think is fascinating about that is I think that Darth Teeth.
he didn't give a name, so that's his name.
I think he really kind of wants to train Osha over May, because he thinks May is weak, because May was ready to cave.
Right.
Because she was confiding in him before she found out the truth of his identity.
Right.
But I'm intrigued. And it's fascinating I don't want to talk about the trolls, but a lot of people, it's amazing how quickly conventional wisdom on the internet moves from indifference to new theories.
All right, Allison, your thoughts.
Yeah, I, you know, I've said before, I think this is sort of a middling series as far as Star Wars series go. Nothing happened here that changed my mind on any of that. Yeah, the fights are nicely done. I think though that the whole thing with the lightsabers going out was not explained well. Nobody at any point says, oh, it's his helmet. And I went online later and I just happened to catch a conversation that, oh, it's made from this special metal that was, you know, introduced in some animation thing where they talk about how it's an ancient metal and it shorts out, kyber crystals.
Yeah, I mean,
and
to I'm like, how
about it? Yeah. If you're going to have a plot point that their lightsabers are going out, you have to explain why. And you can't just assume that everyone is going to have seen this arcane little piece of information on one of the you know, spin-off series. It's just, it's bad writing. So, and little things like that, you know, just annoyed me. The whole reveal that it was this guy. It was by process of elimination. As soon as I realized it wasn't a woman, because I thought, oh, it would be interesting if it was one of their mothers, you know.
I think they were trying to make us think that's what it was.
Yeah, because I mean, that would have actually been interesting because we know something about them. But when it was revealed to be him, and once I realized, okay, it's not a woman, so it's got to be this guy. And it's an old trope to have the, you know, someone be, you know, look like this incompetent, dopey kind of thing. It's the usual suspects approach.
Kaiser Soze.
Yeah, exactly. Kaiser Soze all along. You know, to have it turn out to be him. And so it's like by process of elimination. Oh, okay. But also the reveal wasn't, you know, it's got to be someone you've seen before. So it's got to be him. But beyond that, it's not interesting because we don't know anything about him. It's not like, oh, this time that we trusted him, it's this betrayal. We've known him for 5 minutes.
And we didn't trust him.
So
I know, but I think they're going to tell us because he tells Sol, oh, you don't remember me? Like, we're going to get another flashback.
Right, that's great. But the reveal is the main thing. That reveal has got to hit like a punch. And it didn't because we're just like, okay, it's him. Who is he? I don't know anything about.
Depends on whether or not you're expecting the reveal to be a twist or not, or because
they made it seem like it was going to.
Almost everybody I know figured out that, so it wasn't like a, you know, like, oh my god, he was dead all along. Like, it wasn't one of those kind of reveals. So because almost everyone I know figured it out before they did the reveal, so it wasn't that big of a reveal. Anyway, let's move on.
But all the rest of the things that you said were correct. You know, I mean, other than finding out that the Force is really great at doing haircuts,
lightsabers.
But you use the Force and the lightsaber. You know, I mean, honestly, I thought pair of tweezers, maybe something, but you know, lightsaber. Oh, great, perfect look. One stroke.
That was insane.
That was like, it's really that, because I was wondering what she was doing. It's like, is she committing suicide? Is it, no, she's just redoing her hair. But you know, I expected the confrontation between the two sisters to be more meaningful than that, for them to talk, for them to say something.
I thought they were going to say, like, reveal something, but
yeah,
next episode better be the freaking flashback. Cause
you know, like, what do you mean it was my fault or something like that? It's, you know, But none of that happened. We're no further along as far as that development is concerned. And like you said, there's no way that Sol should not know that that's not her, unless he's deliberately guiding her in there so he can, you know, entrap her.
Yeah.
Which, you know, okay, I'll accept that if they go in that direction. But otherwise, he just looks dumb.
Yeah. Let's move on. We got so many more shows to talk about. So. Final statements?
You know, thumbs sideways for me.
Okay. Next up, we're going to talk Dark Matter episodes 3 and 4, because I know we're super behind on that, and that's totally my fault. But because of that, I've been trying to stay on pace to only watch the 2 episodes that we're going to discuss. And so these episodes, in case for all of those who have forgotten, are just really defining the box and the jumping between universes. So episode 3 is about, you know, he gets captured, tries to figure out how the box works, and then realizes they're going to keep him locked up forever. And his not girlfriend from that universe rescues him, and they escape together. And they figure out how to use the drugs and how it works and how they get to this they have to like relax their minds and blah, blah, blah. And then in the end of episode 3, they end up in this corridor that's got like a million doors. And 4 is all about them opening those doors into all these alternate universes. But I will have to say, the first door they open up looks like a post-apocalyptic world. There's like dust everywhere and ash. And I was like, guys, turn around. What are you doing? Like, it's why like, are you going?
Clearly in the wrong door.
I was like,
pay money for these special effects. We want to see them for a couple of days.
I know, but I was just like, guys, this is the wrong place. There's
check, please.
I know. I was like, yes, let's turn around. I did like they got to one where like there was a tsunami coming at them and they're like, oh crap. And they close the door really fast. And then one of them, I think there's a black hole. And
well, so the sun is like has moved all the way
really close,
much closer to Earth. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like crazy stuff like that was happening. And I was cool. Like, I liked that they were showing those different worlds. I thought that was pretty cool. What I didn't like is Miss Psychiatrist Chick losing her mind twice in that episode. First time, she's like, these corridors must end. There must be an end. And so she just starts sprinting down the hall. And he's like, no, it's infinite. Stop. There's like, you can't get to the end. And she just keeps running. And so then he finally catches up with her because she finally gets tired. And then we get to open a door where there's a blizzard, which will obviously kill you. And she's like, ah, I have to run. I need air. And I'm like, couldn't you have waited till they got to a door where it was like a beach? Like, you know, like, why would you run into an obvious blizzard? And then he has to go chasing after her. I would have closed that door for real. Like, he didn't know her that well. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
he's the hero.
Exactly. Exactly. No, he can't do that kind of thing. Any of us would do it, but that's why we're not starring in a show like this.
Yeah, I would have left her. I can't deal. I like, don't panic in a crisis with me because I will leave you. So I was just like, no, you are very unreliable. You're going to get us killed. Bye. So yeah, then they had to like figure that all out. And I will say the thing that really hooked me on the show was when they finally figured out how to control the doors. That's when I was like, okay, this is different. This is what sets this show apart from all the other multiverse, whatever. And I really like that. So
somebody, and, Jason too, meanwhile, is trying to keep up this facade of pretending to be Jason 1, and he's thrust into a dinner party where he knows some of the alternate versions of the people who are at the party, but he's trying to cover himself. And probably the first really smart thing he does is he goes to his friend who in his normal universe is the black dude who's kind of in charge of the project.
Right.
But in this universe, he's just basically a trust fund baby.
He doesn't seem to be that smart either. He recruits him
to fund him to build a smaller version of you know, show me. Say what?
He doesn't seem to be that smart either. Like, I'm not overly impressed by his intelligence. The trust fund baby guy.
In this version, in this world, he's not.
He's not.
He's just, you know, kind of a lazy, like,
but
you know,
the thing that bothers me the most about Jason 2 is his entire point of doing this and swapping out is he's like, I want to unchange the choice that I made and I want to pick my family over my career. And then he's like, you know what? This is boring. So he quits his job, barely talks to his wife, doesn't want to talk. And then he's trying to like remake his life that he just walked away from. And I'm like, dude, you can't, no. So,
but see, that's what I actually liked about this. I mean, not that I liked him as a character, but I liked that detail because it's like, this is a guy who's never going to be happy no matter what he does. He's chasing after something that doesn't exist. He's unhappy with his life the way it is. He lost a woman who he did love. But this is not her, and this is not that life.
No matter what he does,
it's never going to be enough for him.
And the amount of pressure that he's putting on himself trying to pretend, like, that would stress me out. Like, I
have to say, he's really good at getting information that he needs.
True.
I have to give him that, like taking his son aside and saying, do you know anything? Do you remember these guys? You know, and it's like things like that. And it sounds like a normal conversation to anyone else, but we know it's because he has no idea who these people are.
Right.
And you got to
That
give
was pretty
props to
good.
Joel Edgerton for making the two Jasons so completely different.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not saying I don't like it. I'm just frustrated with, dude, like you kidnapped this
Oh,
other
no,
dude, yanked him
Jason
out of his
2.
life, and then you're like, screw your life. Yeah.
Jason 2 is not a good
No.
person, and I will
No.
stop there.
And I do like too how he the one of the worries about the dinner party was that one of the people who were going to be there was Blair, Daniela's friend, and Blair from his world also went into the box. So he has legitimate worry that this is that Blair. And it turns out
Oh.
not to be, but he's really panicking that, you know, he's going to come face to face with someone who knows exactly who he is.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, this show's got me hooked. I'm in because I was very skeptical going into this show. I was like, I've seen enough multiverse. I don't need to see any more. You guys are crazy. But yeah, I'm in. I'm definitely in. So
It,
let's move
it's
on.
a great ride.
Yeah, I think that their take on it is really unique, and I mean, I'm already done with the show, so I can tell you it
As
gets
am I.
better as it goes along. It gets crazier as it goes along.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah. I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I'm going to say that this is worth the ride. It's there aren't
It's a
any
good
things
ride.
exactly like this one, and it is absolutely worth people's time.
All
Absolutely.
right.
As they
Let's
used
move.
to say at Disneyland in the old days, it's an e-ticket ride.
That's right.
All right, let's move on. The next thing we're going to talk about is The Boys, and this is episode number
Three, four, and five.
three, four, and five. Though I only remember four and five. What the? I don't remember what the heck happened in three. But
There's blood and carnage.
there's
Oh, well, that's unique for this show.
yeah.
Of course, that one.
The main thing that I remember in episode, because in episode, no, at the end of episode three, Homelander loses it. And he's like in front of the mirror and seeing all these different alternate voices in
Oh,
his head.
that's episode. Is
Three.
it three?
Yeah, that's the end of three, is he is having like this psychotic break almost. And he's looking in the mirror and he sees like five different versions of himself. And finally at the end, it's like they tell him he needs to go
To
home.
go home.
Yeah, because he's like realizing he doesn't really know how to talk to his son. They had this big fight because his son accidentally killed somebody, and he genuinely doesn't understand why his son is upset. Like he can't get it. He doesn't understand. And so he
Well,
decided,
he's a sociopath. He's a
well,
psychopath, actually. He
yes.
has no, he doesn't see other people as people.
Exactly. Which he actually articulates in episode five. He was like, it's only
Oh,
me
yeah.
in this world. No one else exists. And I was like, wow, that's not good. But the episode where he goes home,
Episode four.
which is episode four, is so is fill it's a weird thing because it's filled with tension.
Yeah, it
Because
is.
you feel the fear of the scientists that are there, but it strangely fills me with not as much tension because I already know he's going to kill them all. The question is, how is he going to
How?
kill? But so the tension there, there's no scenario where I think he's gonna let them live. And I don't know. I felt like they drew that out a little too much because I was 100% sure he was gonna kill them. And I knew it was gonna be gruesome and somebody was gonna get lasered in some way. But what was interesting, I will say, is listening to how they abused him. To listen to what they did to manipulate him.
I think that was
And to
really
hear
the
about
point
his
of it.
birth, which was like terrifying. That was terrifying too. But would you say,
Oh, the
Alan?
fact that he lasered out his way out of his mother's womb.
Yeah, that
Yeah,
was crazy.
sort of alien-like baby.
Oh.
But I think more the point of this episode was to try to get us to see that there was nothing ever normal in his childhood, and
Right.
the abuse that he suffered at the hands of these scientists and the lack of any kind of love or affection. Is kind of what gave us
Yeah,
this
absolutely. You get a
end
monster.
product.
Yeah, you get a monster if you create a monster.
If you create a lab experiment.
Yeah, my problem with it is that we've visited this before. We were told, you know, like in the first season, that he had these issues from the very beginning.
Right.
He terrified everyone, and that he was literally deliberately denied love because they wanted to create this super being.
This psychosis. They wanted him to crave it.
They wanted him. Yeah. This was their objective, and this is what they got. So yeah, I agree with you that I thought it was really kind of drawn out. I was more interested actually in the story with Huey and his dad and seeing his mom again. That I thought was it hit more emotionally. And then of course, you know, we had the story, we had what was going on with Starlight and Firecracker,
Starlight
and
Firecracker.
Is it Firecracker?
Yeah.
Who I mean, you know, when she lost it was like, she's the audience. That's me. I wanted to punch her out too.
Well, I will reiterate, my issue is that Firecracker gets outed as basically statutory raping a 15-year-old boy when she was 26. And she's like, hey, I did this. So I admit it. So
but
it's
I'm
cool,
owning
right?
it.
Yeah, I'm owning it. And I feel sorry. So it's okay. But Starlight.
I prayed to Jesus. So it's okay.
But Starlight had an abortion and didn't tell you guys about it. So that makes her a monster. And I was like, what? Like, sigh. Anyway, I was afraid that they were going to make it to where Huey didn't know that she did an abortion, but they didn't, which I give them points for. They talked about it. The two of them discussed it and were like, in the situation we're in right now, we can't have a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
No, they were adults.
They had a mature conversation about it, discussed it, and were like, we're not in a place right now where we can have kids. The end. And it should have been their business. And the fact that they publicized her hospital records were like the invasion of privacy of that was just
crazy. What's a HIPAA violation too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really crazy. And she lost all her followers. Oh, though I feel like, to be fair, I feel like she also lost her followers because she beat the crap out of Firecracker. And that was kind of awesome. I don't know. I might have started following her for that. So any other comments, you guys? Somebody else? Take it.
For me, episode 5, the returning special guest star Giancarlo Esposito, they get Stan out of prison under the guise of a pardon for the virus, which I guess is part of the plot line for
Gen V.
For Gen V, the show that I only watched the first 2 episodes of, but they go raid the facility where they're working on the cure or on the virus. And there's a bunch, it's leaked into the ground. The V is leaked into the groundwater. So you've got all these super powered farm critters.
Oh my God.
Crazy teeth and flying and strength and whatnot.
I have to say.
Flying carnivorous sheep. That just cracked me up. I'm sorry.
That was the best. My mouth was on, my jaw was on the ground watching that episode. That was really, really good.
Not only are they carnivorous, but they fly. And when they were tearing that bull apart, it was like, are you kidding me?
Oh my God.
It was nuts. It was one of those kinds of things that only the boys would do.
Yes, and absolutely. I have a question. Are we all saying that Jeffrey Dean Morgan is a figment of Butcher's imagination? Are we all in agreement of that?
No.
I hadn't thought about that, but now my mind is,
no one's
is
ever
going back frantically and trying to think of a conversation he
hasn't talked
he had
to
with
anybody
else.
He has never he has not talked to anyone other than Butcher. And he only talks to Butcher when he's alone.
Considering Butcher's state of mind where he's seeing his dead wife a lot.
Yeah, but there's that's also a possibility.
The
that's when a
they
possibility.
Were, when he was torturing the guy, like he chopped the dude's leg off and he's talking to him, he was like, we are going to do such and such. And the dude was like, what? Like he looked around like, who are you talking about?
Oh, interesting.
So I had not caught that, but
that's all I'm going to notice from here on out. But you could be absolutely right. Because if he has not had any other conversations, and we know he's seeing his wife, and we know he's got that weird parasite in his head.
Right. The wife is like the good, like the angel, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan's the devil.
Yeah, he's the devil.
Yep, that's what they're doing.
Good cop, bad cop. Okay. All right. Thank you. I had not noticed that before, but now that's
you're
all
usually
I'm going
the one
to see.
That does that? Yeah, you're usually the one that
about,
knows.
How about that Vought on Ice spectacular? That
oh my god!
Oh, we forgot about that.
Oh,
oh my god!
That was the most bloody ice skating I've ever seen.
Mainly because Huey's in the vents and a sweat bead drops down on Homelander, and so he just starts laser eyeing here everywhere and chopping people in half.
To be fair, he's not trying to kill them.
Well, no, but
he doesn't
reckless.
Care if he does.
He doesn't
either.
Care
that's
if he does.
Being reckless,
but though. He's not trying to. But it was crazy. That was just crazy.
And they blame it on an electrical fire.
I was like, how did an electrical fire laser somebody in half and chop off somebody's hand and just, oh my goodness. It was crazy.
Oh, one last thing. A-Train and the woman Friday who got demoted.
Are in cahoots.
Are in cahoots. So they frame the
newscaster.
The newscaster as the leak, and also Sister Sage basically lobotomizes herself. And that's why she's willing to have sex with the deep, which is like,
yeah, ew. that was creepy.
There's so many things wrong with that.
With the show.
The fact that she needs to lobotomize herself to find the deep attractive is hilarious to me. And the fact that he's okay with that lets you know how dumb.
Oh, come on. He's doing it with an octopus voiced by an Oscar winner. Come on.
It's not like he has high standards here.
I see your point. But the fact that she knows that she despises him, yet she's like, but if I get a lobotomy, then you're attractive. Like, no. Find somebody that you find attractive before, then lobotomize yourself. And it's just, so many
but
things.
You know, it's not even so much about finding him attractive. She put it herself. She said she needs to get away from herself. Yeah. She needs to stop being herself for a while, which is really a sad commentary.
Her brain just works so fast, and she's so far ahead of everybody else that she can't really stand to be around people. Like, mm-hmm. That's too dumb for her.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all crazy. All right, we've discussed the boys. We need to move on. Holy crap, that show. Oof. Next up, we're going to talk about the Doctor Who finale, because we tried to talk about it at part one, and we were like, well, we can't because we don't know what's going on. And I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt. The joke is on me. Yeah, they did not land that plane, as Yusin likes to say.
That crashed about 100 miles short of the runway.
Ruby's
frankly.
Identity was a real nothing burger.
Oh, wow. My God. I don't even understand. Well, what's with the snow? So, like, if her mom is just what we imagined and put into it because of our thoughts and dreams, whatever, what's the snow? Like, I don't...
What's anything? Why couldn't, if she's just an ordinary person, why could no one see her face? Why could this God character not find her?
What's the pointing doing? And all, like, none of it made any sense.
No. It was like they came up with this thing of, let's do a mystery around her and let's have this happen and let's have that happen. But as far as what it all meant, it was like, we'll figure it out later. And when later came, it was like,
they didn't have anything.
We'll
out.
Just say she's an ordinary woman. Who cares?
And then the whole thing about, because my issue was that episode with the 76 yards or whatever that was, or 72 yards,
yeah,
that they tried to bring that into this and try to explain it, and I was like, that still didn't work. Like, what? Nope.
It was one more thing where you just went, because it's like, how does that even mean anything? That's, you're just reminding me of something else that didn't make sense.
Yes, exactly.
You're not
You're not helping. Make sense here. Not helping. And then at the very end, they're like, and now Ruby's going to leave because she now has a family and she's complete. And she doesn't need the doctor for emotional support animal anymore.
But she's going to be in season two. So,
is she?
Yeah.
She's not going to be the main companion, though.
They're bringing in a second companion.
Yeah. But I mean, the whole, it just, none of it made sense. It was all just such a complete trash fire.
Do a good season finale. Like it was
terrible. I mean, it was so terrible that normally I'm used to going online and seeing people who are, you know, devotees of Doctor Who. And I mean, I'm an old time fan. I go all the way back to the 80s with you know, my Baker. Fandom, but yes, absolutely. Number one. But he's my number one. But anyway, I'm used to going.
Your first doctor, Allison.
That's right. Actually, well, I'm not going to get it. But anyway, so I'm used to getting online and seeing people just going all over the place. How wonderful this was, and how great over episodes that I think really are not so fantastic. This time I went online and everybody, the same people were going, that sucked. But what did that mean? What was the snow? What was this? And so that's how bad this episode was. People who accept far less than I do were still finding this episode lacking. And I mean, I don't understand it. Cause one of the things that RTD used to be so good at was
telling a good story. Yeah.
He used to bring the whole arc together. He knew how to drop little hints and you're Bad Wolf. And so by the end it paid off and it all hung together and you knew what was going on and you didn't go, but
storyline with the master where he started putting posters in the backgrounds and it all came together and it was just fantastic. And this, it's like, did he fall asleep?
It was a train wreck. It was just,
well, let's we're done. I don't need to say anymore.
Move on, nothing to see here.
Yeah, yeah, we're done. All right. Next up, we're gonna talk about the Bridgerton episode 5 and 6. Finally, the second half of season 3 of Bridgerton. And go.
Yes. Well, episode 5 starts off with the announcement of Penelope and Colin's engagement. So, which of course everybody's got an opinion on that.
Usually a negative one.
Yes.
Or like, what? Really? but yeah, it was nice to see her, to see Penelope actually, you know, kind of take some pleasure in listening to people's reactions without actually making herself present. You know, it's like she would just listen from the other side as they'd be surprised and you know, so walk away kind of smirking to herself, which was nice, you know, but it you know, couldn't last completely, I guess.
And the ticking time bomb is that Eloise is trying to get Pen to fess up to Colin that she's Lady Whistledown. And then before the stroke of midnight, and then right before midnight, their idiot, awful friend claims to be Mrs. Whistledown.
Yeah. The thing is, I agree that she has to come clean because it would eventually come out, and it's not something that she can keep hidden from him. It's something, and that is really difficult because how do you break something like that to a guy who says, you know, I hate Lady Whistledown and I want to make sure that she's destroyed utterly, and it's like, oh, by the way, it's me. That's uncomfortable, but you know, in she's been given a little more time because of I've forgotten her name. Is it Cressida?
Cressida. Oh yeah.
Cressida. Because she took credit for it. And this season has sort of made me feel a little sympathy toward her. Cressida? Yeah. Cause we've seen what her family life is like and it's horrible. And you can see that she was really trained to be that way, you know, that they thought this is what she's supposed to be like. And so she's just kind of followed that. And now she's trapped. Nobody wants her. And she needs to get out from under her parents Because otherwise she's going to be sent away to live with her aunt, and she doesn't have a whole lot of options. So she's gotten it into her head that this is a way she can get, because the queen is giving this this award money to anyone who finds out who this is. So she thinks she's going to get this and be able to become financially independent. And so I have to give it to her to do that. How she's going to pull it off, of course, is another thing entirely, because she doesn't have the wit for it. Nope. But I do feel sympathetic toward her after seeing what her family is like and what she's up against. I do feel more for her than I did before.
I would say I feel empathy for her, but not sympathy, because she's still awful.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
So, but I think that takes us through 5 and 6.
Okay.
The stuff happens in 7 and 8.
All right. Well, that's fine for me, because I didn't know what you guys were talking about. So I was blissfully not spoiled, because all of everything.
Maybe like, I don't care.
It just sounded like gibberish to me. So that's blah. All right. So let's talk about the bear.
Arr.
I like the thing that I loved about the premiere.
Stream of consciousness.
It was crazy stream of consciousness, but it also made me realize that it takes place like maybe an hour after the finale of last season. And I thought that I remembered everything that happened in the finale, but as I was watching the premiere, I realized I didn't.
Because, I wish they had done a previously on the bear.
Yeah, because
that would have been helpful. Yeah.
Well, I ended up just watching the finale. Like I stopped and I just went back and watched the finale, because I was like, wait, what's going on? Because I didn't realize that he had had a, like, I remembered he had a fight with Claire and he was stuck in the refrigerator or the freezer and what he said to her. Like, I remembered that, but I didn't remember he had a fight with Cousin at all.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't recall that at all. So I was like, why is he apologizing? What's going on? And so I'm really glad I watched that before, especially before I got to episode 2, because I really would have been lost. But what I thought was so great about the premiere is, other than this, I mean, it is a stream of consciousness. We're in Carmi's head.
Mm-hmm.
We're going forward and backwards in time, and we're just seeing different things that happen to him, and in no real particular order that I can tell, but it still made sense. It was still like, and there was hardly any dialogue. I think I told somebody, I was like, this was like the bear's version of Hush, but without the demons.
There was more dialogue than that.
It was a little bit, but it was like the dialogue.
And it was spaced throughout too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was all like stuff like, yes, chef. Like it wasn't, there was no conversation that really, really happened. So it was a lot of just images. It was a lot of just like images flowing in and out. And it still managed, by the time I was done with the episode, it 100% made sense to me. And I thought it was a fantastic episode.
It was a gorgeous episode. The
beautifully
the
edited and beautifully shot.
Oh, stunningly shot. It was, I mean, they had images in there that were just breathtakingly beautiful. The whole beginning, especially when they're showing the train and they're showing the vista across the water and all of that, just, you know, sort of Chicago waking up. Right. Was just absolutely, like, every shot was a painting. It was beautiful. And the further they went into it, you know, you could really appreciate how all of this was pieced together. And I love the fact that it was not linear, that it was not, you know, chronological, because it was in Carmi's head and people don't think that way. You know, it was they don't have to order their brain like that. And this happened and that happened. You just go back to random things. And so that's how we were seeing it. So I thought it was just so beautifully done.
And I think that they could never have done an episode like this in season 1.
No,
they could have done it maybe in season 2. But season 3 was the perfect place to do an episode like this.
Yeah. Well, especially because after all the craziness of where it ended, then you get this moment where, you know, all of that insanity has happened. And now you've got a moment where Carmi is trying to cool down and trying to process what's gone on, and trying to, and we did get little bits of dialogue. One of the particular things that I thought was interesting was you hear Carmi leave a message on a phone apologizing profusely, and you assume he's talking to Claire.
Right. That was
the message
good.
For Claire. And then it turns out to be Richie. And I thought that was so perfectly done. It was amazing. And of course, the thing is, Richie's reaction is that he's just not super impressed with it.
It was a real heartfelt apology. Like, he really meant it.
It was. But again, when you think back to how raw that scream fest was at the end of season two,
I was glad I went back and watched that episode.
Yeah, it's understandable that he would not just say, "Oh, okay, all is forgiven." The hurt is still there,
and that's kind of what families are like. Families are like that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, very honest.
I love too the random shots of some of the high profile guest stars from previous episodes. Like, we got Jamie Lee Curtis for a little bit. We got the dude from Community, Joel McHale.
Oh my God, he is playing such a terrible person.
He's horrible. Boss
from hell.
Nightmare.
Oh my God.
Nightmare.
We got the kid from, he was in Guardians of the Galaxy 3. He was.
Oh, I know you're talking about.
Will Poulter. I mean, you've got all these high profile guest stars that they just got back for, like, we just need you for like not even half a day.
Yeah, it was just 30 seconds. We just need you 30 seconds.
Because you know that's not cheap to do, but it does pay off because, again, it's his stream of consciousness. Mm-hmm. And we're not sure where some of them are in the timeline.
Right.
Yeah.
And then apparently he worked at a weird like commune where he was like picking vegetables. And
no, there wasn't a commune. That's actually the French Laundry.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, when is he doing this? I was kind of confused about that. But that's the thing that was cool about it is there were parts where I was confused, but it was okay.
I love the fact that Maddie Matheson, who's an executive producer now and was always one of their culinary advisors, he's like their schlubby friend who's always like, "Ooh, let me help. But he's
I didn't know that.
In real life, he's like an Uber foodie guru guy.
Oh, that's cool.
Huge.
But let's talk about the second episode.
Episode two.
Yeah, that actually.
My favorite conversation, the dessert guy. Why am I blanking in his name?
Marcus.
Marcus. Mom. Yeah. My favorite conversation in the entire episode is Marcus talking to Carmi. And Carmi's like, "If you need anything, if you need any help, etc." And Marcus just says, "Is that what you did when your brother died?" And Carmi's "No." It's like,
But then, no pressure, Marcus is like, "So I'm going to need this restaurant to succeed in order for me to adjust to my mom's death. So can you just do that?" And I was like, "Oh my God." Like, all of that was great. But what I really loved, because we talked about the editing and stuff, is the different, like, as every person got to work at the restaurant, the layers of the fight got more intense and more intrinsic and more just like, what was it, non-negotiables?
And the non-negotiables.
Yes. He's trying to explain what non-negotiables are, and then it just escalates. His non-negotiables were insane. Like, he's like, "These aren't crazy." Like, yes, they are, dude. They're absolutely crazy. And so all of that. And then he's like, he's telling Sydney that she's a partner and he's got paperwork to make her a partner, but he's still treating her like an employee because he's coming up with his non-negotiables on his own. If she's a partner, they should be coming up with this together.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not.
Well, and he also changes her menu completely. Yeah.
Yeah. All of these things that he keeps claiming that he needs her and that she's part of the team and they're equals and la, 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 but he's not putting his money where his mouth is.
They're equals, but he's more equal.
Exactly.
I'm sure no woman ever has heard that before.
Yeah, I just really don't like the way he treats her. Like, it really bothers me.
Well, you can see that certain characters are in collision courses.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Very much so.
Which is, absolutely,
because that's definitely where this season is going, because he keeps claiming. And if I was Sydney, do I want part of a company that owes this dude $200,000? Like, no, I don't think I want to be part half of that company.
I do love that when Oliver Platt comes in and it's like, what are you doing here? It's like, last time I checked, I own this place.
Exactly. So I'm like, what is he giving Sydney if he doesn't own it? Like, you know what I'm saying? Well,
it basically is the percentage of, you know, her share.
Right. But I don't know. He's not.
The profits, if they ever materialize.
If they ever make a profit.
Once they pay Uncle back.
And yeah. My whole thing is, yeah, she needs to have a lawyer look at it because she needs to be saying very specifically, if I have this percentage, then that allows me to give voice to my opinions, you know? Yeah. So that's the thing that bothers me the most is he doesn't let her have an opinion and it bothers the crap out of me. So hopefully, and you can see it on her face. You can see her just holding these words back behind her lips, you know? So yeah, I can't wait. I'm trying to stay cool and only watch the episodes we're going to talk about. So, which is very hard for this show because I love this show.
Yeah, but I did not do anything like that.
I know you did. You have no self-control.
I have none at all. No, that's
surprised
correct.
That Hulu. I'm still kind of amazed that some stations, some outlets are dumping all the episodes at once, and some are definitely not. I mean,
I feel like this is the show that you would stop doing because of the acclaim and all of that.
You want people to savor it.
Yes. This is that show. I'm actually
mad.
Just
gorge themselves.
I am mad that they gave us all the episodes. It really actually annoys me.
Well, I'm more mad that there are people online who feel compelled to spoil things. And I'm talking about YouTubeVariety.com.
Oh, no.
I don't want to read in headlines about anything. And,
well, there's...
And that people have no self-control.
The thing is, one of the reasons that I blew through it as fast as I did is because I noticed that it wasn't just, you know, the regular, you know, dweebs on Facebook or whatever. It was like Forbes magazine and Variety and Vulture and all these others who had, you know, they had whole episode descriptions up and they had articles like, what does the finale mean? You know, and things like that. So you're going to get, you know, royally spoiled really fast. So I figured I'm just going to watch it. Something first.
So far, so good. I haven't clicked anything. The only thing is that I normally am on Tumblr, which is some people probably don't even know what that is, but I was on it for a very specific show. And those people, apparently there's a Venn diagram of them crossing over for this show. And they do a bunch of, they always do gift sets. So if I'm going to get spoiled, that's where I'm going to get spoiled. So I have to stay off of that until I finish the show, which is sad because that's normally where I'm scrolling. So I'm like, ugh. So anyway, but we are giving this two thumbs up, the first two episodes. Like,
definitely.
Give them more Emmys.
Very much.
They apparently want more Emmys. So
5 Michelin stars.
All right. So if you have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcamper@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook and YouTube. And you can listen to us on sci-fi.radio and 6 Degrees of Geek. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.